Jacques Berlinerblau is a noted author with a number of important works to his credit, including the brilliant book How to Be Secular, A Call to Arms for Religious Freedom. I would argue that had more Americans heeded that call, we would be in a far healthier place as a nation, both in terms of respect for diversity and appreciation for differences in beliefs. But here we are, and Dr. Berlinerblau has just published his latest book, a sophisticated tome with a simple title, Secularism, The Basics. It's a critically important book for a time such as this, and I am delighted that it brings the author back to State of Belief Radio today. Jacques, thank you for being with us again.
Thank you for having me, Reverend Getty. Great to be here.
Here's a tweet from you regarding the release of this book, and I'm quoting, "To all secularists out there, believers and non-believers alike, either we properly define its meaning or we perish."
I notice that there's, I've been noticing this for 15 years, tremendous confusion about what the S word, secularism, means. And it hit me, who benefits from this confusion? And it was like an epiphany. I realized the adversaries of secularism benefit from the confusion. And what's one of the major confusions? That secularism is atheism, that secularism hates religion, that secularism is an adversary of people of faith. And if you look at the history of secularism, it's really quite the contrary.
So where have you seen the growing threats coming from the most?
It would definitely be, well, it's global. This is a book about global secularisms. In the United States, it's the Christian right. It's that interesting and somewhat perplexing, from a historian's perspective, union of evangelical Protestantism and conservative Roman Catholicism. They joined ranks in the early 70s, ostensibly over their frustration with the Roe v. Wade decision. Mm-hmm. And what I've often noticed in American public culture is when Protestant evangelicals and conservative Roman Catholics are aligned, they are a juggernaut that almost can't be stopped. Whatever they want, they tend to get. So part of the problem begins there in this country, but this is a global issue. In India, there's the BJP party, a very mm-hmm. conservative Hindu nationalist party. In Israel, there are a variety of ultra-Orthodox religious parties, such as the Shas party. And as much as they might dislike one another, Reverend Getty, on theological and doctrinal issues, they all share the same low opinion of political secularism.
Was there anything, one thing here on in the United States that just made it be a bad word?
Yeah, a couple. I do think that secularism mid-20th century, might have gotten thrown around a bit with atheism and communism. Mm. But the final nodding, if you will, occurred right after 9/11 with the work of the New Atheists, who kept speaking in the name of secularism. And quite frankly, I think they were anti-secular in a variety of ways, right? Secularism is not atheism. However, I want to say this very, very clearly. Secularism is there to defend atheists. It's there to defend Baptists. It's there to defend Roman Catholics and Muslims. It's not a metaphysical or anti-metaphysical doctrine, secularism. Secularism is a strategy of governance wed to an intuition. And the intuition is that religions must be carefully regulated lest they do some of the less nice things that religions occasionally but not always do in the course of their development.
I read you as saying that a loss of an understanding of and respect for fundamental secular values imperils people of faith as much as those who claim no faith, and that the recent surge in Anti-Semitism is just one such manifestation.
Oh, absolutely. Interestingly, American secular movements have always had a very similar enemy to African Americans and religious minorities. And it's been a type of white conservative Christian, generally from the South, but that's starting to expand. Mm-hmm. What's interesting to me is when I speak to African American scholars and theologians and journalists, they tell me that secularism is very unpopular in the African-American community, that it's a stand-in for whiteness. This might have to do with the fact that the secular movement was so white and so not diverse itself up until the end of the 20th century. I do think things are starting to change, but obviously not fast enough. That's just a sidebar, but it's interesting the way secularism is read in a non-benign way by a variety of communities of faith and racial communities in our country.
Yeah. A frequent theme on this show is the complacency of secular and more broadly most progressive Americans in the face of ever-growing threats to their liberty. They either discount the theocrats as a fringe group or are intimidated by accusations of being anti-religion. What are your thoughts there?
That your analysis is prescient. Those are two stop-in-their-track sorts of moves. They are intimidated by the claim that they're anti-religious. A secularist is not anti-religious. A secularist is opposed to one version of religion becoming established within a liberal democratic polity. So I think that what secularists must understand is what John Locke fully understood, that there's much that is great about religion. John Locke was a religious person himself, right? He spoke about the great virtues of Christianity. He developed his theory of secularism on the basis of his reading of Christianity. But what Locke pointed out is that when one religion, and it doesn't matter what religion it is, right, is given untrammeled power, when it's unchecked, when it is permitted to rule over other religious and non-religious groups, there is invariably going to be trouble. And we're seeing the trouble today. Locke had a great line, everyone is orthodox to himself. I'll repeat that. Everyone is orthodox to himself. It means every person who's religious, with a few exceptions, believes their way of doing it is right. And it's not a bad thing. It's good to believe in your deity, in your God. Yeah. The problem is when that supercharges and becomes infused with anger and rage and violence and a desire to control others. What Locke wanted to do was create a secular state that nullified the power of any religious orthodoxy to impact the lives of any citizen against their will. And this is really where secularism is born and where it generates its unique energy.
If we're going to talk about the basics of secularism, what are some of the basics that everyone needs to know?
So I just want to read my definition, right? Here's one basic. It's not atheism, right? That's very interesting to me that the two have become confused. In the book, I try to trace the moment in the 19th century where they first became entangled, secularism and atheism. But I'm going to read my definition because I've been at this for 20 years, Reverend Gaddy, and I think I got this one right. My first definition in 2005 was bad. My 2012 definition was better. And here I have achieved the epiphany. Political secularism refers to legally binding actions of the state that seek to regulate the relationship between itself and religious citizens and between religious citizens themselves. That's it. Took a long time to come up with that. That manifesto. So essentially, a secular state is in the position of governing religious groups. And we go back to Locke again, so that these religious groups can get to God. That's the idea, right? That good, strong, fair policies vis-a-vis religions prevents religious groups from attacking one another. And this is very important, from trying to overtake the state. In a nutshell, that's what secularism tries to do. In the book, I point out there are 10 principles that keep coming up in various forms of secularism. And each form of secularism takes those 10 principles and mixes and matches them, emphasizes and de-emphasizes them in different ways. And some of the mixes and matches are terrible, like Soviet Soviet atheist secularism, right, where the principle that there must be order is magnified to an exponential degree, and you get horrendous human rights abuses. I'd be the last person to say that every secularism is a good secularism. But then, Reverend Gaddy, we have Indian secularism, which I refer to as accommodationism, which maximizes the principle of the equality of all citizens in the eyes of the state. And I think there's a lot to be learned by looking at India and their model. There are other models which we can discuss if you'd like.
Could I ask you to talk a bit about some of the core secular values upon which our nation was built and which would be profoundly missed by most of us were they successfully subordinated to Christianist authoritarianism?
I think the first is equality, which is why I've really been looking at the 14th Amendment, and almost in some of my recent writing, I've been wondering maybe the 14th Amendment can shout down the First Amendment. I'm not a big fan of the First Amendment, and I do think we need to get into that. The reason the First Amendment beguiles me is that I've always felt it was poorly drafted. So let's look at those 16 words. Shall we? Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. As a person who reads those documents from the 17th and 18th century, where there are religion clauses and colonial constitutions, national constitutions, and philosophical treatises, something's missing in our free exercise clause. What's missing, and Mr. Madison, it perplexes me as to why he didn't put it there, is every free exercise clause that I've looked at in the 17th and 18th century argues that your free exercise does not extend to unlawfulness, that there is a limit on one's free exercise of religion. The moment it impinges on the rights of others or threatens the safety and order of the state, you lose your free exercise rights. Why Mr. Madison did not include that in the First Amendment is a huge puzzle. I do believe I'm the first person to point this out, strangely enough, that it's not there. We know he didn't want to write the Bill of Rights. We know he had alternative versions of the First Amendment, which were better, if you ask me. But that's sort of a mystery. So what are some of the enduring values? One, that free exercise is great. It's a great way to get to God. But there must be a limit on free exercise. All right? And we see this in the cases about people who want to congregate during the COVID pandemic to worship, thus endangering other people that might not be of the same faith, right? Mm-hmm. We see this untrammeled free exercise in the activism of Kim Davis, who refused to grant a marriage license to a gay couple in Kentucky, right? So she was claiming that her free exercise literally overrides the laws of the state. So one important secular value is the limit on free exercise in the name of order. And a second is equality. And what I find happening in the United States is some believers, if you will, are more equal than others. Their rights and their religious theological beliefs are being established as the laws of a state and even the laws of the land. And how is that fair to people that do not subscribe to the tenets of various forms of conservative Christian faiths?
As a longtime college professor, have you seen a shift over the years in how your students understand secularism and how much or how little importance they ascribe to it?
Wow, what a really good question. I in the aughts, a lot of my students were taking my secularism course at Jesuit Georgetown University because they were atheists. And they were kind of in for a rude surprise when I said, guys, I love atheists. Some of my best friends are atheists. I'm an atheist, but I'm not my best friend, right? But this is not a course about atheists, right? This is a course about secularism. And of course, being very bright people, they stayed on and they enjoyed and they understood how secularism defends not only freedom of religion, but freedom from religion. So there's a huge place for atheists within secularism. I also noticed that many of the conservative Christian kids that came to my classes, really wonderful kids, really smart. One thing I didn't notice about them, they came more armed and equipped with talking points than I believed humanly possible for the typical American undergraduate, which suggested to me that I'm not going to say they had been coached, but they had heard about secularism in their Bible study groups. They had heard their pastors talking about the evils of secularism. And a lot of what they were complaining about to me was just kind of pap. It was just copy. It was just, oh, it's godlessness. Oh, it's demonic. Oh, it's a plot by internationalists. And as I spoke to these students, I do think in some cases I might have broken them down a little bit, or at least opened up their capacity to see secularism as a Protestant Christian idea. And that usually takes the edge off with conservative Christian students, right? Once they understand that its lineage emerges from the Middle Ages and disputes about the authority of the Pope, and then it shifts to the Reformation and disputes about how churches can get along with one another, they start to open up, but not as much as I would like.
Jack, what would you like every reader of this book to walk away knowing?
I really want them to understand, one, the religious lineage of secularism, two, that secularism isn't atheism, three, that secularism is very complicated. And the best discussions I've had over the last couple of weeks as we're promoting the book have been with even professors and journalists and theologians such as yourself and clergy who said, wow, this is complicated stuff. Secularism is really, really complicated. I want people to understand that. You can't come in hot on this issue. You've got to see how it doesn't work. It did not work in the Soviet Union. I don't think it's working in China. I think it's amounting to a massive human rights abuse. And it's secularism, as far as I can tell. I've sampled the DNA. I've looked at it. It's a form of secularism. By the same token, I think in France, it actually does work, though it has a very, very bad name. It has a bad reputation. In the United States, I want my readers to understand that we've never had a strong secular tradition in this country. We had about four decades of separationist secularism from 1947 to 1985. And right now, we don't have a functioning secularism in American jurisprudence and in American legislatures and the courts. So there are a lot of things to understand. Yeah. One of my chapters is called Embrace Complexity. I want people to understand the complexity of secular, just like I want them to understand the complexity of Christianity, right? I always feel complexity is on the, if the arc of the universe bends towards truth, at the same time, it's bending towards complexity, right? And the more we teach people to think through complicated issues, I think we're doing something good for the species and for those who believe in God. We're doing something good for God as well. God smiles on us when we embrace complexity.
What's the one question interviewers aren't asking you that you want to answer?
Oh, wow. It's a great question. What is the role of violence in a secular state? That's a very, very – and to what degree does the secular state, when confronted by those who might be intolerant, just have to roll up its sleeves and open up a can of whoop-ass or whatever the – John Locke understood this very, very well. He understood that there were certain groups that were so incredibly unreasonable, right, that they needed to be dealt with by force of arms. But as Americans, and it's better this way, Reverend Gaddy, we don't like to theorize about coming violence. Unfortunately, I think violence is coming on all sides.
Jacques Berliner Blau is professor of Jewish civilization at Georgetown University. He possesses doctorates in ancient languages and literatures and theoretical sociology and publishes research about secularism, literature, religion, and politics, and African-American and Jewish-American relations. Dr. Berliner Blau, latest book, Secularism, The Basics, was published this week. Thank you so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend Gaddy, and please keep doing this great work. It's so important. Thank you.